Well, when I go to Halifax.
Extension number 30,002 is Eric Harrison, Reel 3. Now, what happened when you got to Halifax?
Well, when I got to Halifax, we went immediately by train to Moncton, which was in Nova Scotia.
Now, tell me, what was the journey like? Because people talk about Canadian railways as being quite impressive.
Canadian railways were very good, yeah. They were very good. It was just a routine trip. I don't know how long it took us. Can't remember. But Moncton was a new reception centre, and I helped to build it. The first job I got there was laying bricks. And we were waiting to go down to Camden. You know, we couldn't go to Camden because the course that they had there hadn't finished what they'd set out to do. And
so tell me about building the camp. That
sounds yes,
right.
The place was just a sea of mud, absolutely a sea of mud, and we were building the foundations for the wooden huts that we were going to put up. And I consider that the first job I ever did in the RAF, for which I got paid, not very handsomely, was to build, help to build Moncton Reception Centre. We used to have time off in the evenings, and I learned to ice skate while I was there, and we used to go for a meal. I had my 21st birthday in Moncton.
Right.
And Coca-Cola, that would be the 31st of October. Does that fit in with what I've got there?
You seem to go to Camden and then come back to Moncton.
Oh, yeah, right, okay.
You're Moncton.
Yeah, so I didn't go, I wasn't in Moncton, sorry. I wasn't in Moncton for my birthday the first time I was at Moncton, but I was there a second time.
So what was happening in the first? So you're building a camp.
Yeah.
And what about the recreations? What was it like in the local towns? I mean, first time abroad, I expect.
Well, the people were very generous to us, and we were very, very welcome. There were, you know, there were the Commonwealth, of course, and the Commonwealth were behind us in our endeavours. I don't think I was there very long.
Probably
a couple of weeks
between August and September, and then September you go to now. Where is this Camden?
Camden is in South Carolina, and I was on course 42C.
Now, hang on. How did you get there?
We went by train. It took us 3 days on the train. Slept on. I think they call them couch or something like that. You just pull them out of the roof, the beds. The two seats we were sat on made into one bed, and then there was a bed above us.
And what was the name of it? Did it have a name, the unit, or was it just
at Camden?
There's not one here.
Yeah, are we okay for a minute? Have you got that other Southern Aviation School, Camden, South Carolina? You see, it wasn't an army place or an air force place. It was a private.
Now, what happened when you got there? To tell us, you know, what was the sort of reception you got? How was the place set up? That's what I mean.
How it what?
How was it set up?
Well,
how's it all going to work? How many people were there? Who's training you?
There would be about 30 of us on my course, and there would be 30 people there on another course. But we would staggered. If it was a 3 month course, say a 12 week course, there'd be 6 weeks. The first course there would move up to the the highest standard of flying after 6 weeks, and we came in to take the place. Our instructors were private people, were civilians. I mean, they weren't, they didn't belong to the RAF, or they didn't belong to the American Air Corps.
Now, what's your name? Yours seems to have been a man called Dibbs.
Dibbs was an Armenian, and he hated the sight of me. Armenia had been taken over by the Russians, the Nazis went into Poland, Russia went into Armenia and took Armenia over. Now, when the war first started, the Russians were on the side of the Germans, so I was being taught to fly by somebody who was under the hammer and sickle anyway, really, because the Russians were masters in his country, and they were fighting with Germany, and you know, here he was earning a living by training somebody that was going to go out and fight his own Confederates, and he just hated the sight of me, and I got no help from him at all.
Now, how did they start training? Do you remember that? I mean, you know, what was the pattern of training? How did they start?
Well, you can't get much from that book because
it's got lesson numbers. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah.
So you start very end of August. What do you remember of the progress? I mean, you'd have a familiarisation flight first, I presume.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was dual, of course, with Dibsey or somebody else similar. And can I just get you a photograph? We used to have to go down and sit on the flying line and wait for our turn to fly. There would maybe be 10 or 15 of us sat down on the flying line and drinking Coca-Cola and eating peanut bars. Just generally chatting amongst ourselves, waiting for an aeroplane to become available. There would be at least a dozen Stearman PT-17s, which we were flying, would be on the flying line. And when one became available, whoever's turn it was next to fly would go on. His instructor would meet him and they would go up for their flying lesson, whatever it was. I do remember the surprise I got when, after my first familiarisation trip, the first time I flew after that, we were doing loops and spins. And, you know, here was me hardly ever had the wheel of a plane. And I was doing loops and spins, almost the first thing you were taught, and which did surprise me. I thought that you wouldn't do things like that until you'd had quite a lot of flying time under your belt. But
now, what was the Stearman PT-17? What was it like to fly? What did you think? What was it like as an airplane? I'm sorry. I mean, I appreciate you've got a photograph, but for those who can't see.
Well, it was the equivalent of, in this country, of the Tiger Moth. It was made by Boeing's, and I can't tell you anything technical about it because I'm not technically minded, but it was made by Boeing's, and it was a slightly bigger plane than a Tiger Moth. It was very easy.
Two wings.
Yeah, but it was a biplane, yeah. It was quite easy to handle. And we had to solo in 10 hours. I had to get an extension until about 11 and a half hours. I got this extension, an extra hour and a half.
What did you learn? Take me through what you'd learn in dual instruction.
In dual instruction, we'd learn how to fly straight and level. You know, how to keep the plane on a course by using the rudders, by using the pedals, rather. The pedals were in the air. The pedals would would facilitate the rudders, which gave you a heading on the ground. The pedals were brakes. The same pedal was a brake on the ground, but in the air it kept your nose straight.
So that moved the rudder on the vertical.
To move the wings, you would.
Explain what the joystick did.
Yeah, well, the joystick helped you to either go down or to go up. If you put the joystick forward, you would go down. If you pulled it back in towards your stomach, it would go up. If you moved it to the left, then that worked the ailerons, and the ailerons would on the wings would take you left, the aileron on the right would take you to the right. And it doesn't say so in that book, but I failed. And I'd done 60 hours.
We'll come to that later. So what else have you got then? There, you've got. What about the throttle? That's another flying control.
What did that do? Well, the throttle was sort of a lever, and that would just increase your speed, which would the faster you flew, unless you. Took evasive action. I mean, by pushing the throttle forward and getting more speed, you got more lift because there's more air passing under your wings.
Now, what about the instruments you had in this deal? Do you remember what they had?
Well, there would only be a compass, an altimeter, the horizon indicator, they called it. Yeah, there was an horizon indicator which told you whether your nose was above the horizon or beneath it. You know, if you want to fly straight and level, you've got to keep the nose on the horizon.
What about turn and bank indicator?
Turn and bank, yeah, there would be a turn and bank indicator, yes. It was a needle. If you turned left, the needle would go that way. Turn right, it would go that way.
Yeah, so How did you first? You had to have a small extension. Why did they give you an extension? Because sometimes they wouldn't.
Yeah, well, I don't really know the reasons for that. I think probably from their point of view, it was a financial decision. If they spent an extra hour and a half, and they would get paid for that. It was a private venture. And Britain wouldn't get a pilot that probably it wouldn't have got under normal circumstances.
Now, what do you remember about your first solo? Now, looking through here, first solo looks like around about September the 17th. Do you remember your first solo?
Yes, I do remember. Yeah, the pilot got out at the end of the runway and just walked back to these flights, and I took off. It was just routine to me. It was a big moment. It was a bit like getting married, I suppose. Really, there's only one time you can do it in your life, and that doesn't apply to marriage, but if you know what I mean. You've taken off and you've gone solo, and you can't ever do that again. So it has to be a big occasion, really. But we didn't think of anything like that. It was just the next stage, really, it achieved.
Any problems in your solo?
No. I just did what I had to do three times, land three times, and.
Now, what were the skills of takeoff and landing? Do you remember taking off and landing? What did you have to do?
Well, you have to keep the plane straight. Otherwise, you'll run it off the runway.
What would you use for that?
And incidentally, it was grass runways.
Is it difficult to keep them straight and take off?
Well, the engines got torque, you see. The engines, the propellers is going anti-clockwise. And, of course, the torque pulls it naturally to the left. And so you've got to give it some right rudder to counteract that, so you're really taking off and your feet are like that. They're not like that. They're like that because you, counteracting the torque.
Now, what about when you take off? Any other skills as you take off? How do you do it? Do you remember?
No, I think it's just experience, really. It's just your use of the aircraft.
Did they warn you not to try and turn back?
No.
If you stalled on takeoff?
No, we some of those exercises we did in there, although it's not easy to follow that, I know, but some of the exercises we did in there were practicing forced landings.
Tell me about that then.
And so, you know, the pilot would, you would be flying along and suddenly your engine would go. The pilot had pulled the throttle back and he would, I think he would say to me, do a forced landing. So I've got to look around to see where there's a decent field, and I've probably only got 3,000 feet or something to play with. And so you've got to make a quick decision, and you make your, find out which way the wind is, and to land into wind, you've got to work out, you know, what the wind's like. These are things that you have to do even if you're not making a forced landing. When you're in training, you've got to think to yourself as you look over the side and you see smoke from houses and things like that, that, oh, well, if I had to land here, I'd have to go such and such a route. And so we would do a dummy landing, and then when you got down to about, we'll say, 500 feet, the instructor would do the throttle for you. He would just push it forward and the plane went up again. So you never did land. There was never a forced landing while I was there, but we all practiced forced landings.
Now, what about landings? What were the skills of landing, a normal landing? It's on this grass runway, I don't know. So how would you do it?
Well, it's just a question of knowing your aircraft very, very well, so you know where your feet are, your feet being the wheels. You've got to know where you are. You see, we had to, those days, we had to land, we had to stall it to land it. I mean, today they fly it in, you don't stall it today, but it's a different technique altogether now. But then you had to keep pulling your nose up until eventually your engine conks, as it were, and your tail and the two wheels hit the ground at the same time. And then, of course, as soon as that's happened, you give it a bit of throttle to get the nose down again. And you've got, that's what you've got to learn. That's the judgment you've got to make.
Now, did you find that easy? Or
no, and I didn't find it too easy.
What was your problem?
Well, I think probably I made a few bumpy landings, and that means that you didn't really know where your wheels were.
Were you landing too fast, or were you landing too high?
Landing too high, yeah.
So where you misjudge your height?
Yeah, I'd be
when
putting
you
it.
Stall, you drop 10
yeah,
feet.
I'd put it. Yeah, that's the figure I would have put on it. That and so you bump it in a bit, really. I mean, it's not dangerous. It's just uncomfortable if you were flying a civilian airline, and you know, everybody would say, well, that was one of the worst landings I've ever had, or something like that.
Now, after you've done your solo, you presumably start doing aerobatics. Now, I was surprised, you, as you said, you did some aerobatics earlier.
Yeah, we did aerobatics.
What aerobatics do you remember doing?
To do a loop, you've got to get height first of all, and then you've got to put your nose down and until you've got a very good forward speed, and then pull the stick back, and you go like that right up, and as you're going up, of course, you're stalling the plane, and you've got to be able to stall that plane right at the top, so that as you're at the top, the nose comes down, and then you will give it some throttle to regain your position. And then the spins was you would stall the plane You would be flying straight and level and pull the nose up, pull the stick back. And incidentally, I'm doing a wheel, but we didn't have a wheel, we had a joystick. And so, you know, I was thinking of the Sunderland or something like that. We would pull the stick back until the plane went up and stalled, and then the nose drops, and you give it right rudder, hard right rudder, if you want to spin to the right, and the plane will just spin. Just keep your foot on it. If you want to straighten out, you've got to put it the other way. If you're going to roll it to the right, you've got to pull your joystick to the right, and your ailerons, so your feet are working the ailerons. Sorry, your feet are working the rudder, and pulling the stick to the right is working the aileron, so that she just comes over like that. And if you want to straighten up, you've got to go the other way. And judge, that's the art, you see, is when you come out of the roll, you come out a bit like that instead of like that. And that's
one side.
Yeah, and that's where the accuracies or the inaccuracies come in, and the judgments are made. He'll never make a pilot, or he'll be a good pilot, because he can do all that.
I'll come back to how you did. We're going to talk. What about side slipping?
No, I never did any of that. Not intent.
Anything you remember doing? Nothing.
No.
Spinning.
No, I think. That's about it.
Now, how were you doing all over? I mean, you did a lot of hours, didn't you? I mean, you were there all through September.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at your logbook now. Training. And, you know, you're there through September, then you start, you know, into October. You seem to get. I'm wondering whether this Boykin might be the chap that you don't like.
It was Dibsey.
It was Dibsey.
Oh, I never forget
it. Boykin after a while.
Well, I think that was because I complained about Dibs, and sort of said, I want another instructor. I don't get on with this guy. I mean, he used to tell me to go out and get drunk and forget everything. And, you know, this weekend, you know, get drunk. Just get yourself into another world. You're too serious.
And what about this new instructor? Was he better? It seems to have been. There's a few down here.
I have no comment I can make on those. They were just ordinary guys, I think, really.
Now, in the end, you failed.
I failed.
Now, take me through. Were you enjoying it? I mean, did you like flying like you thought you would? Did you think you were?
No. I was too serious about it. I was too serious. But I wouldn't say the way to rectify that was to go out and get drunk.
Now, what do you mean by saying, did you not enjoy flying? Did you find it stressful or something? What was wrong?
Yeah. Well, I think probably you used the right phraseology there, saying stressful, yes. I think I was a bit too stressed.
Did you not get enjoyment out of flying that you thought you would?
Well, I enjoyed it, but you know, it's a serious matter. You can die if you do the wrong thing. So it's got to be serious.
Now, why did you fail then? What do you think?
Well, the actual phraseology they used with me, which is not in that book, but I did, was lack of coordination. In other words, you know what it is, don't you? Lack of coordination, stick and rudder, and everything has to be in harmony, and I just wasn't that good.
Did you agree with him?
Yep. It was the best decision I made in the RAF.
Or they made.
They made, yeah.
And you failed. It is failure. 25th of October 1941, so just before your birthday.
Just before my birthday. And I went back to Moncton.
Was there any particular reason? You know, was there an incident that provoked you being failed, or was it just overall?
No.
There wasn't one incident.
I mean, the first intimation I had of how difficult it was going to be for me was when I had to get an extension to my flying time to go solo. You know, there were some of the lads would if the, we were given 10 hours, I think, if I remember rightly, some of them would solo at 8. They were born pilots. I wasn't. I was somatotyped by when I remustered as an observer. As because of my navigation, sorry, my my mathematics skills.
Yeah, and, that will come up. So you were told you were put off the course. And
yeah, washed out, as they called it. Washed out. Terrible terminology.
Now, just before we leave, because there are a couple more things about that. Yeah. What was life like there, you know, at Canada? Where were you living? We haven't really talked about, you know, we talked about the flying, but not about what was going on.
No.
Where were you living? What was your accommodation like?
The accommodation was good. There would be dormitories. There'd be about 20 of us in a dormitory. And
comfortable?
Yeah. It was twin bunks. Twin bunks. And we all had our own wardrobe, as it were. The discipline inflicted on us was diabolically outrageous.
Why? In what way?
In what way? Yeah, right. Well, when we put our... when we had our locker and we got weekly inspections, they would open the locker and handkerchiefs all had to be folded correctly and the rounded end pointing outwards, if you know what I mean. Shirts had to be put in folded correctly and you couldn't just put the shirt that way around, it had to be this way around and all the rounded edges were facing you. And we got demerits for various things that were wrong, like the bed sheets were not tucked in properly and that had to be tucked in a special way like nurses do it. And if they were the wrong way, you'd get a demerit. If you got... I think you'll probably be allowed 60 demerits in a week. And if you got more demerits, say you got 12 demerits, that meant you had to be 6 hours on the parade ground. And the parade ground wasn't a flat ground, it was cobble, it was pebbles. And you had to walk round and round, and it was very hot. And there would be civilian people there who were looking to see you didn't slack. And as a consequence of all this tremendous discipline that was inflicted on us, not by the RAF. We did have an RAF officer there to look after our requirements, but he had nothing whatsoever to do other than he was the person we'd go to if we had a problem.
So who was doing it? The civilians?
Civilians, yeah, like civilian police people. You know, like... we've got plenty of them here now. There were dozens of them at the test match last week, and if you did anything, they'd frog march you out.
What was the food like?
The food was very, very good, yeah.
Was it American or British?
No, it was American, yeah.
And what did you think of that? Because that was unusual then. We're all a lot more used to it now. But what was it like then?
It was very good. I mean, you didn't get anything like Lancashire hot pot or steak and kidney pies or things like that. You'd get pancakes and the sort of things that the Americans are used to. But the big feature about the place was the civilian population.